Dictionaries are trying to keep up with us. In 2011, the word YOLO burst onto the pop culture scene with the song The Motto by Canadian rapper Drake featuring American rapper Lil Wayne. YOLO is an acronym for You Only Live Once, and the word was flying around university campuses that year. Undergraduate students made sure to tell me about YOLO when I asked them about new slang, one of my favorite activities at the beginning of class, and then they would often add, "But we know it's not a real word." Now, some of us in the linguistics community were skeptical at the time about whether the word YOLO would have legs. That is, would it prove to have staying power as a word? But we were not arguing that YOLO wasn't a real word. A word is a real word if it conveys shared meaning within a community, which YOLO clearly was doing. When people tell me that YOLO or chillax or irregardless is not a real word, I think what they mean is that they believe it is not in a standard dictionary, and a word isn't real unless it is in a dictionary. But dictionary editors would be the first to tell you that this is not the role of dictionaries. Dictionary editors, or lexicographers, are trying to keep up with us as speakers and writers as we change the language, creating new words and shifting the meaning of existing words. They see dictionaries as primarily descriptive resources, capturing how we're using the language. A usage label may indicate that a word is generally considered informal or non-standard or slang or offensive. And that is modern lexicographers trying to describe societal judgments about a word as opposed to making their own. In 2016, the editors of the illustrious Oxford English Dictionary, or OED, added YOLO to that dictionary. They trace the first written use back to 1968, and by 2016, the editors had clearly decided that YOLO was pervasive enough, not a lexical flash in the pan, to merit inclusion. You can find YOLO in the Cambridge Dictionary online, but not yet in Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, or the American Heritage Dictionary online, a useful reminder that there is no such thing as the dictionary, but rather many dictionaries with different editors and publishers, varying philosophies about inclusion and usage labels, and of course, different publication dates. One distinctive feature of the American Heritage Dictionary is the usage panel. If you look up a word like finalize, you will see a usage note explaining that for decades, the verb finalize was considered objectionable bureaucratic jargon. The note goes on to say, in a survey conducted in the late 1960s, 90% of the usage panel found the example, finalize plans for a class reunion, to be unacceptable. By 1988, the disapproval rate for a similar sentence had dropped to 71%, by 1997, only 28% objected, and the disapproval rate was a mere 15% in 2014. As I write in the book, that is the sound of a language peeve dying. It's also a good says who moment. Who is on this usage panel? The usage panel was created in the late 1960s in reaction to arguably the most controversial dictionary ever published, Webster's Third New International Dictionary, which was seen by many as too permissive and descriptive. American Heritage jumped into the fray offering this panel that would dole out judgments about acceptability alongside more descriptive definitions of the words themselves. The usage panel comprised about 200 people, including well-known academics and authors, the puzzler Will Shortz, and Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. I was asked to join in 2005 and was one of only a dozen or so linguists on the panel. We received a survey once a year, which asked us to rate the acceptability of everything from pronunciations, for example, homogeneous rather than homogeneous, to meaning, for example, does hoi polloi now refer to the elite rather than the masses? The panel had a reputation for being conservative. Adding linguists was designed to create a bit more openness to language change and variation. And I see the American Heritage Usage Notes as a valuable resource, not to tell us whether something is or isn't acceptable, but rather to give us a sense of how cranky we can anticipate highly educated conservative readers or listeners might be about a bit of usage. We can then make more informed choices as speakers and writers.